Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Just how bad is that Ravens defense? And can Jackson Dart save the Giants? It's your big week four preview show with Jory Epstein and Ben Fox. And it's next on Inside Coverage. All right, let's do a show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to week four. Welcome to the Week 4 Preview Show on a Thursday here. Inside covers the how and the why of everything you need to know in the National Football League. My name is Andrew Siciliano. I thank you for listening on whatever podcast platform you're listening on, thanking and liking and sharing and whatever, subscribing. If you're watching on yahoosports.tv, our brand new platform, on Fast Channel, on your smart television, or on the YouTube page from Yahoo Sports, we thank you for consuming this show that way as well. Every Thursday, we've been doing this now, as I've said, a tradition truly unlike any other. This is our fourth week. We try to lay out the most important games to us for the coming week, right before, when we record this, the Thursday night football game. It is not just me, thankfully for you. Joining me today on the show, Jory Epstein and Ben Fox. Ben, our sports gambling expert. It is great to have you both. And Jory, last week I called this a tradition unlike any other. And I confused Charles. He was like, what do you mean? What do you mean a tradition? And then I asked him how he was feeling. And he didn't like it that I asked how he was feeling. And we've now moved past that. There are no feel. I'm not asking that. But I can ask you. Jory, how are you?
I am doing great. And it's actually funny because as an avid listener to the show, I've been listening to the episodes y'all have done. And I did listen. And I too thought you were about to ask Charles how he was feeling that moment. And I was so excited that he finally had positive news that the steroids had worked. His performance enhancing drugs had indeed enhanced his performance. And then you're like, no, I meant like picking the game. So C-Rob and I were in the same boat there. That was actually pretty funny that y'all had that conversation.
I love that you're sitting in New York saying y'all repeatedly as well, going back to Dallas roots. That
oh, absolutely.
My heart as well. I'm glad y'all are both here, Ben, including you as well, sir.
Yeah. Do we have to worry about C-Rob? I know, he was probable, then maybe downgraded a questionable. Now he's out for the Thursday pod. Is this
well, that's what happens when the Guardians take two here? Out of three from the Tigers to open up that series, man. You know, that that's what happens. When the Gardos just steal the Tigers' soul.
100-1 and back in July to win that division. It's a wild 15 and a half games back. It's a big story.
This is definitely
big
a football story. Show. Yeah, it's definitely a football show. But I love that FanGraphs, that's like the analytics side of baseball for those who don't know. FanGraphs, it's a site. Look it up. FanGraphs, the first week of September, had the Guardians with a 0.0. I'm not good at math, but I think those are bad odds. 0.0 chance of winning the division. It's not over, right? There's still four games left to play. But, as Han Solo once said, never tell me the odds. Or as I like to say now, never tell me the, what is it, the win likelihood? What do they call it in the fourth quarter? The win probability.
Win probability.
Never tell me the win probability. Yeah, like those charts, oh, it went up and it went down. Big deal. Can't we just celebrate the plays the players made? Why do you need to tell me that down 10 to nothing with 3:45 left, their win probability sucked? Yeah, no kidding it did. No kidding. Of course. Yes, that's a bad score.
Andrew, it is so much fun when you have those games where it's like, and they had a 98% win probability with 3 minutes left to go. And then all of a sudden you see the chart on ESPN and it just shoots down or shoots up. So yes, I actually love that. And I want it specifically for the times that we have these super improbable outcomes. And I think that when we have this, it's kind of a reminder of, it might sound cliche when you hear Russell Wilson saying this week, it really came down to a few plays, but these games largely do come down to a few plays unless you're the Minnesota Vikings and the Cincinnati Bengals last week.
I'm going to sound like an angry man on my lawn. I'm really not angry. Anything that can add to the narrative, I am all for the narrative. I just think that sometimes the numbers take away from the amazing accomplishment of the players. Like, they're the story, not that they somehow defied math. Yes, like when I look down from my booth calling the game Sunday in Cleveland and there are people leaving and it's raining and it's 10 to nothing with 3:45 to go, I know their probability of winning this game is really low, right? What did the math say? The math said people were leaving and it was raining. Does that make sense? I used to have this conversation with the NFL Network people cutting the highlights because they would throw all these win probabilities onto the screen. I'm like, this guy just made a ridiculous toe tap sideline catch. Like, I don't need to know that it was like 0.3% chance of him catching that football. What a catch. Like,
we really hit a nerve here to start.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, but Andrew, you know what stat we do need? We did need all of the NFL Network stats about Jordan Davis returning the blocked field goal.
Yes.
When it was first like,
that was
no player over 330 pounds has run faster on a return. And then it became no player over 330 pounds had run faster on a field goal return for a touchdown in the second half. It was like all of these caveats. And I'm like, that's what this hasn't happened before. I loved it.
And I love the conversation with Garofolo, friend of the program, afterwards, where Jordan Davis said something like, I haven't run that fast since the combine. Yeah. And he had a ridiculous speed at the combine. I like analytics. I don't mind probabilities. I just like the stories of the players and the narratives. Let's talk about players and games. Can we do that? Because week four is actually a fascinating week. There are teams that are 0-3 facing each other. There are teams that are 3-0 facing each other. Let's begin with a game that is two 3-0 teams facing each other. And you could argue it's the best game of the week, right? So it's the Eagles. It's the Bucs. It's in Tampa. It's Kevin Burkhardt, Tom Brady, Aaron Andrews, and Tom Rinaldi, the A-team here for Fox. It is the only game between two 3-0 teams this week. It is also a game with two fascinating teams, like the Eagles we just described, because they blocked two Josh Cardi kicks in the fourth quarter, and Jordan Davis ran that back for a touchdown. They overcame a 19-point deficit after playing a bad first half, and to be quite frank, getting dominated by the Rams. The Buccaneers, meantime, thanks to a kick block, almost blew the game, and then for the third consecutive week, Baker Mayfield marched them down the field and won a game. Matter of fact, the Buccaneers are the first team of the Super Bowl era with a game-winning score in the final minute of the fourth quarter in each of their first three games, and the third team since 1970 with a game-winning score in the final minute of the fourth quarter in three straight games at any point during the season. Forget about that. The injuries are more significant. Luke Getteke out, Mock out, Wirfs and Godwin maybe back. And I do think, Jory, it's somewhat notable that Baker is limited with a biceps injury, but by all accounts, he should be good to go. Also interesting that Nick Sirianni is flying the team down there on Friday, not Saturday, saying he wants to go a day early to adjust to the heat and the humidity. This after the Eagles had a brutally hot training camp in Philadelphia, so I don't know why that matters. Baker said, Jory, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when they get here. We're going to be more accustomed to the heat than they are.
Well, it may not matter when they get there, but I will say it matters the past couple of years how we've seen the evolution of these two teams since they played in the playoffs. I was in Tampa two seasons ago for the playoff game when the Buccaneers beat the Eagles, and I was in that Eagles locker room afterward, and you just see this locker room that really didn't seem to believe in Nick Sirianni. They didn't know where they were going from there. And it's just crazy to me to think how we went from legitimately not knowing for a couple days whether Nick Sirianni would be coming back to they've now won 24 of 27 games since that moment, if you count playoffs, and obviously are the defending Super Bowl champions. To me, this is not a game where I'm most interested in who's going to win. I'm almost more interested in how they're going to win and what the fourth quarter is going to look like, because this is one of those games that just feels like it's going to come down to it. Baker Mayfield always keeps his team fighting. You see the Eagles, I mean, how much are they down to the Rams last week, and they just are never out of a game. But I will say, when I think about the Buccaneers' ability to get pressure on an opposing quarterback, this feels like more of a Saquon Barkley than an A.J. Brown game to me, but we'll see. And then for Baker Mayfield, of course, it would be clutch if he could get Chris Godwin back, given how many of his receivers continue to have injuries.
And I will say, Joy, that I care both who wins and also by how much.
Yes.
That's basically pretty much why.
And the win probability.
Exactly. We got to have the win probability in there. This is a fascinating game for a bunch of reasons. Obviously, these teams familiar with each other. Eagles are 3.5-point road favorites. This opened Philly -3, pushed up a little bit, I think partially based off of some of those injuries and partially because Mike Evans is out. He's probably about that worth a 0.5-point-ish, even at this point in his career. I think what's interesting is last week we saw the Rams go into Philly and they ran all over the Eagles. And conversely, Saquon Barkley had 18 carries for 46 yards. So he didn't really do anything. And that's against the Rams rushing defense. They're 18th in DVOA. The Bucks defense, excuse me, is second. Obviously, Vita Vea, right, in the middle. Big reason nobody can run on them. But are they going to be able to get anything going on the ground is certainly a big thing to look at in this game for the Eagles versus Tampa Bay. And then that Mike Evans injury, the Eagles, one of their biggest issues on defense has been who is playing cornerback opposite Quinyon Mitchell. Well, if you assume maybe he was going to match up with Mike Evans, maybe there's a little more opportunity for Emeka Buka, whoever's number 2-3 receiver. Now, all of a sudden, you slot him over, potentially Emeka Buka going up against Quinyon Mitchell. That's potentially a problem for the Bucks. So this is a basically 50-50 betting split, more money on the Eagles at a couple of books. I think we'll probably still see more of the public on the Eagles just because they have won 19 of 20 games. But a really interesting game. I think we'll probably see some sharps come in on the Bucks +3.5 just because even if they don't win games, they've kept everything close. And we've seen that as well with Baker Mayfield. He's always in it towards the end. And in these close games, if they win, that's great. If they lose, that's great. Bettors don't necessarily care as long as the Bucks cover the +3.5. And I think there'll be a lot of sharper bettors on the Bucks come Sunday.
Side note here, I benched Emeka Buka last week because you have to get, you know, your rosters in before the TNF game. And if I didn't play him and I wasn't certain about whether or not he was going to be healthy. Remember, he didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday. My only replacement was Josh Palmer, and he was playing Thursday, and Josh Palmer did nothing because the Bills wouldn't throw the ball down the field, and I won by 0.5 point. 0.5 point. That's it. Ooh. Somehow I survived with Josh Palmer over Emeka Abuka, but nobody cares, and I digress. Last week, Saquon couldn't run, really. Rams bottled him up. The style of this game to me is fascinating because when Kevin Betula was calling plays in the second half last week against the Rams, they finally threw the ball down the field, whether it's AJ or Dallas Goedert. The numbers just absolutely jump off the page. Jalen Hurts has 3 touchdown passes in the second half last week against the Rams. He hadn't thrown a single touchdown pass in the previous 10 quarters. He had 209 yards last week in the second half. He had 270 yards through the previous 10 quarters combined. He had 7 downfield completions. We're not talking 30 yards. We're talking 10 yards in the second half last week. He had only 2 in the previous 10 quarters before the offense actually woke up and realized that they had weapons there at their disposal other than Saquon. How do they attack a Todd Bowles defense that is going to blitz? Are you running into that blitz, or are you getting the ball out quickly and letting Jalen Hurts, a real professional quarterback here, beat you? That, to me, is interesting. And if they just say, we're going to run, and we're not going to hide it, this is what we do, can you stop it? I wonder if that's sustainable here for the Eagles. And if they learned something last week, and maybe stylistically, this is a shift back towards a balanced offense, they've won 19 of 20 games here. 19 of 20, that's absurd. Kind of correcting the massive shift towards run only that they had, Jory, last year coming out of the bye.
See, and I wonder, because even if you look at what Saquon did last week, to me, the issue is that this is a Buccaneers team that can pressure the passer, that can blitz. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the next gen stats on the Buccaneers' ability to blitz and the Eagles' ability to respond to the blitz, the Buccaneers rank 7th in terms of success with the blitz, and their defense does, and the Eagles' offense ranks 21st being able to withstand it. And so to me, yes, Jalen Hurts against the Rams did have success passing later in the game, but I just wonder if these blitzes in particular will make the Eagles more comfortable leaning on the run, especially if they can get Saquon going.
Yeah, it's a fascinating point here. The styles here are going to be truly the story of the game. And the idea as well, though, the Buccaneers have pretty much had the Eagles' number. They've beaten them 6 out of 7 If you go back, and that includes the postseason, Jalen Hurts, since he took over as the Eagles starting quarterback, has really only had two outcomes in the postseason: go to the Super Bowl or get beaten by the Bucs. That's it. So now he gets the Bucs again for the second consecutive year in Philadelphia. There's also that game coming up in Kansas City. It's the 1-2 Ravens and the 1-2 Chiefs. And barring some kind of tie, one of these teams with Super Bowl aspirations is walking out of there at 1-3. It's a Nance Romo Tracy Wolfson game on CBS. And I know this sounds absurd, but the headline for this game might be, this is a can the KC offense get right against a bad Baltimore defense, which is never a sentence which I thought I would say out loud. The Ravens are almost becoming, I say almost, they're not there, they're almost becoming the Bengals of 2024, in which they're going to score 30 points and have to pray to hang on and win because the defense is also going to give up 30 points. No defense in the NFL has given up more yards than the Baltimore Ravens. But they are decidedly different defense with Justin Madubuike out of there. And Madubuike is going to miss his second consecutive game. John Harbaugh was kind of vague yesterday, said he really couldn't say much about it. He said he's not going to play, and I haven't been given the okay to comment on it at this point, which doesn't sound good. And maybe this is the game where the Chiefs can actually run the football. I think Kansas City, I think Baltimore's the better team. Let me say it that way. But I think Kansas City finds a way to win. And maybe, Jory, this is one of their better offensive performances in recent vintage, because even going back to late last year, they haven't had many.
Right. As much as the Baltimore Ravens will scare most of the league more than the New York Giants, from a defensive standpoint right now, I would actually say the Ravens are not necessarily as tough as the Giants, who the Chiefs, of course, just played on Sunday Night Football. I think this is one of those games where the result is going to be crazy either way, because neither team has started the season 1-3 in a decade. The Ravens have only started 1-3 twice this entire millennium. It was 10 years ago and 20 years ago, so maybe it's just an every 10 years type of thing. And the Chiefs had multiple times, but not since 2015. I think this is the type of game where they're also fairly evenly matched up, because I trust the Chiefs defense more than its offense right now, and I trust the Ravens offense a heck of a lot more than the defense. Lamar Jackson has struggled at Arrowhead. That's something he's going to have to get over, even though he told reporters, quote, that's in the past. But I think that this is one of those games where you say maybe it's about time for the Chiefs, and maybe the Ravens, particularly with the loss of Madubuike, are going to need a little bit of time to get right.
Yeah, another massive game, obviously, in the AFC. I think the odds show us a little bit, obviously, what odds makers think about these two teams. Like, the Ravens are still plus 550. They're the second Super Bowl favorite behind the Bills. The Chiefs are 14-1, so they're right. The Chargers are 15-1, right, despite the Chargers being 3-0. I think part of that is also just because the respect for Mahomes. And as I talk to odds makers, it's kind of a Mahomes tax. You can only lower this Chiefs Super Bowl odds so far before, if it's 30-1, right, you have to bet the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes as a starter. He's only at least made the AFC Championship game, right? So until he doesn't do that, you kind of have to assume that's going to happen. But these are still two very different teams. I did an article last week when they were 0-2. I wouldn't say that much changed over the course of watching that game against the Giants. A lot of their offense, outside of maybe the drive to start the second half, they were kicking field goals, and a lot of it was because of the ineptitude of the Giants and giving them, you know, the ball back. It wasn't like they were dominating the game. I wouldn't say it was a particularly impressive victory. And for the Ravens, ultimately, they still played the Bills, possibly the only team in the league with more talent or higher power rating than they had in week one. And they played kind of a pissed off Lions team, right, who I think didn't feel like they were getting the respect after they really did lay an egg in week one against Green Bay. So it's part of the reason you always have to take some of the records with a grain of salt. We always hear, right, the 0-2 teams, can you make the playoffs? It does depend who the first team, you know, two teams you played in that season were. I think in this case, this game is so much more important for the Chiefs. they really need to win this game because they have a much tougher schedule. They still have the Bills. They have the Commanders. They have the Chargers. They have a couple other games that are difficult. I think they have the Lions still. So they have a tougher schedule. And they are, again, going to be a home underdog right now, +2.5. I think this game probably will stay around that line. The public is all over the Ravens, about 80% of the bets, 80% of the money at multiple sports books on the Ravens. And it's just because I think the way the perception of those two teams, and also with the Chiefs, they keep talking about, you know, Rashee Rice in a couple of weeks will come back. Xavier Worthy might be back this week. We're talking about Xavier Worthy like he's Randy Moss in 1998. I mean, he will help the offense, but it's not like this is a cure-all for the offense. So I think the Ravens are still a much stronger team. I'm actually a little surprised this line is only Ravens -2.5, but just to see how these two teams, based off perception, back in May, this was Chiefs -1.5. So it has shifted significantly just based off of the first couple of games and kind of what we've seen. The Ravens, even with that loss, are still either the number one or number two power rated team by most odds makers in the NFL.
Which is so nutty here. If you were to do one of those bits on TV where you blurred the headshot or covered up the logo and just put the stats, right, and asked everyone on the table, hey, can you guess who this player is or who this team is? So if I gave you these stats: most yards allowed in the NFL, 415. Most points allowed, 96. Most rushing yards allowed per game, 149 in team history. And I put those stats up and say, name this team. And then you unveiled it, and it was a Baltimore Ravens logo. You'd be stunned. But that's actually what it is. And remember, one of those games was against the Browns. One of those games, they held the Browns to 17 points. Think about that. Held them to 17 points. And one of those touchdowns was a late, quote unquote, garbage time touchdown with Dylan Gabriel on the field, marching them down the field. And it was the B team that was in there. And they still have allowed. Some of it is just the fourth quarter, week one, where Josh Allen went nuclear. But it shows you the big picture here, where Lamar has to outscore teams. And Derrick Henry is fumbling. I'm still one of those who think that the Ravens are going to be there at the end of the year. It's just, it's stunning. I think Kansas City finds a way to win this. Kansas City at home. Coming up, there's a game in Dublin this week. Aaron Rodgers likes Guinness. Least surprising headline, so do I for that matter, of the week. We will preview the game in Dublin. The Vikings and the Steelers. And we got Jory writing about Jackson Dart. Does he break the trend? And does a rookie quarterback beat Jim Harbaugh? That is coming up next on Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Thanks for watching, everybody. Here we go, previewing week number four, continuing previewing week number four. Andrew Siciliano, Jory Epstein, and our betting analyst, Ben Fox. There's a game at 9:30 Eastern. Yes, it is that time of the year again. Coming up on Sunday, we have the international series beginning. I know we had one in Brazil, but not a 9:30 Sunday start. It's at Croke Park in Dublin, Ireland, guys, which seats 82,300 people. There is only one stadium bigger in the NFL, and that is MetLife Stadium. It's the 2-1 Vikings as they embark on a two-week road trip. They're in London week five as well. And the 2-1 Pittsburgh Steelers on NFL Network, Joe Davis, Greg Olson, Pam Oliver, and Jamie Erdahl. It's interesting. Aaron Rodgers and Carson Wentz, Jory, have met once before. It was back in 2020. The Packers won the game. Wentz was with the Eagles then. Wentz was benched for Jalen Hurts in the second half, and that was it. That was curtains for him in Philadelphia. Jalen Hurts would take over, and you know the rest of the story from there. Carson Wentz has a chance here. If he plays well, if he beats the Steelers, hey, big audience in this game. He has the chance to give Kevin O'Connell a really difficult decision if he plays well. O'Connell's been asked a few times this week to commit to J.J. McCarthy. As soon as he's healthy, he's coming back. He's the guy. And he's kind of tap danced around it. Carson Wentz in Ireland, where Aaron Rodgers says he loves Guinness, but Budweiser is the official beer of the National Football League, and that storyline will likely be buried on game day. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We see Aaron Rodgers for the second time going to Europe, or second straight year, I should say, going to Europe. And last year with the Jets, he went and he played the same Vikings team, and he went 29 of 54 for 244 yards, two touchdowns, and three interceptions. They had a narrow 23-17 loss, but despite that being a narrow loss, one-score game, and despite the Jets being 2-3, that was the game that got Robert Saleh fired. And Woody Johnson, as the ambassador to the UK, was not happy to be losing in front of all of his ambassador area, I suppose. So I would say one thing that Aaron Rodgers has going for him on this abroad trip is that his owner is not the former ambassador of the country that he is visiting to, and that should be good. What he does not have going for him is that he's still playing against a Brian Flores defense. And Aaron Rodgers even told reporters this week that he does believe Brian Flores should get another head coaching job in the NFL, based on how successful the defense he's been running has been. And Aaron Rodgers said, yes, the players have been executing, but this is not just an execution element. This is not just talent. This is specifically a schematic element. I think that the Minnesota defense will cause problems for Aaron Rodgers that he will need to overcome, which he can. I'm not saying he can't, but it will be a challenge. And what I don't know is if the Pittsburgh Steelers defense will cause those same problems for Carson Wentz. This is not the Pittsburgh Steelers defense we heard about for so many years. This is a defense that the last five games last year, going into the games this year, really has kind of struggled to be consistent. Its stars are not showing up quite in the same way. Now, Cam Hayward's kind of rounding into form. He had a great game last week, but I do think that I am more concerned about what Aaron Rodgers will see on defense than Carson Wentz, and that is not what you want to hear if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, I remember watching that game last year in Vegas, so much, much better that on the East Coast now and could watch the 9:30 a.m. start as opposed to the 6:30 a.m. start. But I think that last year was also a bad Sam Darnold game, and the defense played very well for the Vikings, and still Aaron Rodgers struggled. Rodgers is 22nd in QBR. This offense hasn't been that great. They had, I think, 200 yards of total offense against the Patriots. Somehow won that game because the defense forced five turnovers, including one fumble at the 6-inch yard line. So that was a game that they should have lost. They probably should be 1-2. I think two big things for the Vikings. Number one, Jordan Addison coming back from the suspension. So all of a sudden now Justin Jefferson has his running mate. And number two, obviously, J.J. McCarthy, a rough start, but he also didn't have Christian Darrisaw, who is a top five left tackle. And that offense looks so much better, so much more confident, so much more time to throw. I can say from watching closely that Justin School, who is the backup to Darrisaw, to say he was a turnstile would be generous to turnstiles. So that was a complete disaster for McCarthy. Definitely sped him up in his processing for that game. So the Vikings 2.5-point favorites here at essentially a neutral field. Two other things as well for the Steelers, Joey Porter Jr., the corner, and Deshaun Elliott, both limited in practice, both on Wednesday and on Thursday. Again, you don't want to have secondary injuries when going against Justin Jefferson and Addison and Hockenson and everyone else. So this is a little of a seemingly mismatch between not a great Pittsburgh offense and a very good Vikings defense. And then a Vikings offense that, as long as it's kind of like a Porsche, right? You have the keys, just don't crash it. Against the Steelers defense, we thought was going to be a lot better. Hasn't really been that great so far. Surprisingly, betting's kind of about 55-45, a little more on the Vikings, but not a giant, public line, or the public hasn't supported one team as much as we've seen certainly some of these other games yet.
The only time, and Jory, you guys, Ben, you as well, both mentioned it, the only time that Rodgers has faced Brian Flores, he got picked off three times. So it's interesting as well how they're not stretching the field. It's actually not interesting. It's glaring, the numbers, when you look at Rodgers. No one has thrown the ball behind the line of scrimmage more than Aaron Rodgers this year. No quarterback of all the 32 quarterbacks, actually make it 37 quarterbacks starting so far. No one has thrown the ball behind the line of scrimmage more than Aaron Rodgers. 31.4% of his attempts are behind the line of scrimmage. He's completed one deep pass through 3 weeks the entire year. Now, logic dictates you're going to blitz. You're going to blitz me into submission here. If you're Brian Flores, I'm getting the ball out quickly. That kind of plays into my hands, regardless. How that actually plays out on game day, I think, is an entirely different issue. I think, regardless of the numbers, this one's fun. It's in Ireland. Now, I mean, I don't know that that factors once the game begins. Matter of fact, I know that it doesn't. Both teams are arriving there late in the week. I'm here for the international flavor. I think it's cool to see a game someplace other than the normals, the typical locations, London, although I am excited to be there next week for the Vikings and the Browns. But yeah, this one's fun. I will be getting up bright and early for it. And I'm leaning Vikings here. I think Carson Wentz finds a way with obviously some help from that Brian Flores defense. And I think they carry a little winning streak into Tottenham next week. All right, let's move on to the Chargers and the Giants, because Jory, I know you've been writing about Jackson Dart, and Russell yesterday said that he's not done. It's not the end of his career. It is, however, the start of Jackson Dart's career. And you know the numbers that rookie quarterbacks don't beat Jim Harbaugh. But what's surprising to me, and remember, Jackson Dart was taken when the Giants moved back up in the bottom of the first round. A lot of people thought it would be Shador there. Tyler Shuck, who ended up going in the second round to the Saints, was also a possibility here. No quarterback drafted in the back half of the first round, so 17 and on, has started a game in the first month of the season in over 20 years. Teddy Bridgewater was the last to do it. So as much as all of us wanted to see Jackson Dart, Jory, at least every Giants fan certainly wanted to see Jackson Dart, and I think most of the television viewing public in America after watching Sunday night wanted to see Jackson Dart. A guy starting this early, taken where he was taken, is a bit of an anomaly.
It absolutely is. And I think about this because we had a similar conversation with Drake May last year in the New England Patriots. And when was the right time to start? And who was the right opponent to start him against? And was the offensive line ready? Was the defense ready? I think the Giants are doing this a week early. I think if you waited one more week, you say, oh, you actually get to face the Saints, who haven't won a game, as opposed to the Chargers, who haven't lost a game and have an excellent defense and an excellent team. Now, what I think is interesting is, to me, because the Giants are starting Jackson Dart for the first time against such a good team, I started asking different coaches and talent evaluators around the league, what would you want to see from Jackson Dart if this was your quarterback? Because to me, yes, of course, you want to win the game. I'm not downplaying that that is objective number one. But if that is the only benchmark by which you gauge whether Jackson Dart's first game is a success, when you're choosing to start him so early in the season against such a good opponent, I think that's just unfair to Jackson Dart. And I heard different things from different coaches and evaluators along the lines of, hey, we want to see, can he get the operation out cleanly? Can he avoid delay of games penalty or illegal formations? Can he make sure everyone is lined up correctly? Can he read the defense well? But perhaps the most interesting thing I heard from a talent evaluator was that if they were on the team with Jackson Dart, they would want to see, could he sustain long drives? And I think about this because go back 2 weeks ago to Cam Ward's fantastic throw against the Rams when everyone was so excited about the touchdown, but clearly it was a risky throw. And it wasn't the type of throw that was going to keep you on the field, because if you only have explosives and only have explosives that are risky enough, they're probably going to get the ball turned over at some point. That's actually not the most likely way to repeatedly win games. You might win a game, you might win a series, but I'm curious, can Jackson Dart say, yes, I'm athletic, and yes, I can throw the deep ball, as Malik Nabers talked about this week, but actually the best thing I can do for my team is have some 5-yard completions, some 7 yards, some 3 air yards, but let them get a few yards after the catch. Can he do that, where it's not quite dinking and dunking, but it's allowing the defense to get worn down on the other side of the field and allowing the offense to just keep moving and building momentum? That's what I want to see from Jackson Dart this week.
So Jory talks to people in the NFL. I talk to bookmakers and bettors. Same process, different people. I think what was interesting about this game in May, right, when sportsbooks released the lines after the schedule, this was Chargers -3.5. It got re-released Chargers -5.5, basically last Sunday. And which you'd kind of expect based off the Chargers, obviously 3-0, and the Giants 0-3, did get then pushed up to 6 off of some sharp money. But basically the only movement after Jackson Dart was announced was from Chargers minus six. Again, that's at the Giants, so they're a road favorite. Chargers minus six to minus 6.5. So it's really only about a half point. I think some of that is because just from talking to bookmakers, it was always baked in a little bit that it probably could be Jackson Dart starting as early as this week, just based off of kind of how badly Russell Wilson looked. And that was the feedback I got from a lot of odds makers, is just they kind of had to go to him, and how big a difference could there be? I think the interesting thing with Wilson, and Jory hit on that some, we saw that with J.J. McCarthy in week one, right? Some not getting the play in, delay of game, penalties, like that's a big thing for rookie quarterbacks. I said earlier on Yahoo Sports Daily, I thought that for Jackson Dart, basically he had obviously has a higher ceiling, I would say, than Russell Wilson, but also has a lower floor, right? And against a really good Chargers defense, it could go bad quickly. The Giants schedule too, as alluded to, they have at the Saints next week. They then have Eagles, at Broncos, Eagles, 49ers, at Bears, Packers, at Lions. There are a lot of really good defenses and really good teams that you're playing. So he's been, thrown right in there, and he's going to sink or he's going to swim. I think you do give the fan base certainly something to rally around, but the Chargers are one of two teams that are 3-0 against the spread. The public, as you would expect, all over the Chargers, even at that 6.5 number. Total has come down a tiny bit with that rookie quarterback going against a very good defense. But that was also interesting. I do an article before the season comparing basically the starter to the backup, how much they're worth against the spread. And Russell Wilson was 1.5. Obviously, I did it over Jameis Winston because he was technically the backup at that point. You would think it'd probably be 2 or 2.5 points, basically over Jackson Dart. But rookie quarterbacks are also really difficult for bookmakers just because they haven't seen them in the NFL. So a lot of them just start with zero and kind of go off the first half, first couple games of what they see. And, we saw that a little bit with Tyler Shuck last week, right? You get it at least in garbage time, you can see a little bit about him. We're going to learn very quickly about Jackson Dart because he does also have a lot of weapons in that offense, unlike maybe Cam Ward in Tennessee. So if he can utilize some of them, he should have a little bit of success, but it's a tall task that they're asking of him.
Yeah, it is, especially against a good DC like Jesse Minter, who's going to disguise coverages, and you're never going to necessarily know where the rush is coming from. You gotta play zone rather than a man defense most of the time. You're not going to get Malik Nabers running one-on-one on a corner down the sideline on a 9. It's just likely not going to happen, but he looked good and the offense looked creative, as creative as a preseason offense could be. When Dart was in there, a lot of RPOs, a lot of play action stuff in the backfield. I'm looking forward to it. Look, the Giants need it. They have the worst home record in the NFL since the start of last year. They've won one game. It's them and the Titans with the worst home record in the NFL. They've scored fewer than 10 points 7 times since the start of last year. That is the worst in the NFL. Any spark will do, and I think he gets it. I don't know if it leads to a win, but it's got to be better than what we saw Sunday night. Let's poll the audience here. You two, what do you think of the Jackson Dart, Anakin Skywalker, black face paint thing? Jory, I'm assuming you're not a Star Wars fan. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. What do you think of that?
Not a big Star Wars fan, but I will say that the Giants celebrate Jackson Dart swagger that was talked about quite a bit in all of their interviews this week. And so I think whatever makes him feel his best to play his best, more power to him.
Yeah, look, I love Star Wars.
I like
it back, and I'm a big fan of Jackson Dart. Anakin Skywalker, not Hayden Christensen, not like the most revered portrayal in the Star Wars universe, so to speak. Ben, you like it?
I was going to say, are we going Anakin Skywalker misunderstood? I'm not sure where we're going with the Anakin Skywalker, underrated. But no, I like the face paint. Think it looks good. I don't know if it leads to any points on Sunday, but no, he should do whatever makes him feel best on the field.
I would say Anakin Skywalker overrated, Padme Natalie Portman underrated. Can we do that?
We can do that, yeah.
Okay, I'm a dork. Moving on. Let's get to the Colts and the Rams. By the way, okay, I didn't give you the broadcasters. Kevin Harlan, Trent Green, Melanie Collins on the Chargers and the Giants. And then the Colts are 3-0. The Rams are 2-1. That game is at SoFi with Kevin Kugler, Daryl Johnston, Allison Williams on the call for Fox. Jonathan Taylor leads the league in rushing. Puka Nacua leads the league in receiving. Yay, they're both going to be in the same game. Colts haven't been 3-0 since 2009. They went 14-0 and lost to the Super Bowl, lost in the Super Bowl in Miami to the Saints. Listen, the Rams can get after the passer. They have 12 sacks. That's tied to the Broncos for the most of the NFL. My biggest question here for the Rams, and they're top five total offense, total defense. I think the Rams are the better team. Yes, I'm saying that. I think they have the better quarterback. I think there's just the better team, and that's not a knock at Daniel Jones. Matthew Stafford's going to be in Canton one day. The issue here is the road-weary Rams, after getting a good fight in Tennessee, after then going home and then having to fly all the way to Philadelphia. That's an awful flight. I just had to do it last month. Granted, I wasn't on a charter. And then they come back. That was a mentally and physically exhausting game last week in Philadelphia. They had built themselves up for that game for months and months and months. They had circled it on the calendar, and they weren't afraid to tell you about it. And then they blew a 19-point lead. And they blew a 19-point lead where they were lining up for a game-winning field goal that everyone thought was going to make, because you weren't going to get it blocked again, and then they did. That was draining. How do they respond? Sean McVay is usually good at getting his team prepared, both schematically and emotionally. This one is a legitimate challenge, truly. Now, the Colts don't travel well. It's not like it's going to be this loud building like the Niners are going to come to town, at least for the opposition. Rams get a real home game here. Jory, I want to pick the Rams. This one kind of, though, as you see the Rams football over my shoulder, kind of scares me.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I actually do believe the Rams are the best team the Colts will have faced yet. Now, Obviously, Titans and Dolphins, there's not really a question. The Broncos are a good team, and that was a close game. I still think the Rams scare me more than the Broncos do, particularly after I've seen how the beginning of their season has unfolded. And so I would say that this is not necessarily what we've I think the Colts were probably a little bit high on now because of the opponents they had early in the season. There's always a little bit of that adjustment over the course of the season. I think they're a good team. I think they could easily win their division. I also think that they're going to have more of a competition this week, and I don't have a lot of concerns about the impact of the Eagles on the Rams, because I think, if anything, they're going to be fired up to get a win that they feel like they should have gotten last week. What I will say is probably the most fun part of this game is that we have the leading receiver or the receiving leader so far through 3 weeks and the rushing leader so far through 3 weeks in Puka Nacua and Jonathan Taylor. And according to NFL Next Gen stats, we have not had those two face off in the same game in 5 years since week 5, 2020. So this should have a outsized impact on everyone's fantasy team, regardless of who wins. But Ben still might tell us who will win.
I don't know if I can say who will win. This is,
you
to
could.
Me, like a great game. I could. I will choose not to. For preservation both of my own dignity and DMs, and as a reporter, not a handicapper. But I think that this is a perfect game to in-game bet, if there ever was one, because to your point, Andrew, we don't really know exactly what Rams team we're going to get. The Rams certainly could easily be 3-0. They played really well in those games. They kicked way too many field goals in that first half to keep the Eagles in. But if you just pause the TV at whatever that would be, 2:30 Eastern, you would say the Rams are going to the Super Bowl, and they were destroying the number one team in the NFC, potentially the Eagles. They were dominating that game. All of a sudden they come home. Are they going to be pissed off and focused, or are they going to be a little drained? And the Colts, even though they're 3-0, it's Daniel Jones coming into town. Like, you know, I think that's a difficult thing to know. The Colts, like, we certainly wouldn't have seen them as the number one team offense by DVOA so far. The Rams have the number one rushing attack by DVOA. The Colts defense, 23rd rushing D by DVOA. So potentially a mismatch there. Colts, the other team 3-0 against the spread so far in the offseason. This was Rams minus 6.5. This reopened Sunday, Rams minus 5.5, and now is Rams minus 3.5. So some bets on the Colts, also some more respect for the Colts. The actual betting on the game, about 50-50 right now. Some more of the larger money on the Colts so far. But I think the Colts a little fraudulent. I think as many do, certainly just seeing the fact that they're number one offense in DVOA. It's only week three. I think that if the Rams are focused, they do have a veteran team with Stafford. I think they get this one done. This could be a little bit of a reawakening. And we say, okay, the Rams, they just kind of blew that second half. They are who we thought they were versus the Colts. Still being 3-1, you still would say that's a great start. You wouldn't have seen through four games for them.
Sure. No, you wouldn't. And I still think the Rams are a Super Bowl team. And I was calling a game in Cleveland, looking down at the scores, going, oh, yeah, woohoo, I picked that one right. And then all of a sudden, of course, I didn't pick that one right. Speaking of DMs, by the way, if anyone needs two to this one, I got two to move because I can't make it. Feel free. Hit me up. Am I allowed to do that? Either way, I just did. Coming up, we still have not yet hit Micah and his return to Dallas. We will do that next on Inside Coverage. Inside Coverage. I know you want us to talk about the Cowboys. Of course you do. So we're going to do that now. It's the Cowboys, it's the Packers. If you haven't heard, it's Sunday Night Football. Tirico and Collinsworth and Melissa Stark down at the sideline. And Micah Parsons returning to AT&T Stadium without a tribute video. It's okay. Search YouTube. There are a bunch of Micah Parsons videos with him sacking the quarterback. He's going to sack Dak Prescott, I all but guarantee you, at least once on Sunday night. This is the story, Jory, of a team that last week said we might go undefeated in the Green Bay Packers and got stunned in Cleveland against a team that has a quarterback playing exceptionally well in Dak Prescott, but won't have CeeDee Lamb this week, won't have Tyler Booker, the rookie who's played well on that offensive line, and, oh, by the way, has to score enough points to make up for a defense that is giving up more explosives, more chunk plays, and just playing really poorly. This is your old backyard. I'm assuming you're mildly excited for this one.
It should be a great game, and I'm glad that while I will be at the Giants-Chargers game earlier in the day, that's the 1 p.m. game Eastern. This game's not till Sunday night, so I'm sure my editors will be thrilled if I can file my story before then anyway. So yes, it should be an interesting game to say the least. And I think that this is interesting because the Cowboys defense and Micah Parsons are going to be judged against one another, whether or not that's fair. I would actually argue that it's a little bit oversimplified because when I think of the Cowboys defense last year, yes, there have been some injuries, but in terms of who was actually on the roster, this is a team that had Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence and Jordan Lewis, and now all three of them are gone this year. And oh, Jordan Lewis, by the way, in Jacksonville, I mean, you might not think of him as a household name. He had two interceptions in the first three games for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So when you look at where that secondary's gone wrong, well, you're missing Jordan Lewis. Jaron Bland's been out, although as of Thursday, he was a full practice participant, and I would say he's the best corner on the roster right now. And so I think he is better than Trayvon Diggs. So if he can get back, that should help a little bit slow the Packers. But I think that if I'm the Cowboys, when I saw the Cleveland Browns beat the Packers, I was disappointed because I know I'm getting a hungry Packers team coming in at this stage. I think whether Micah Parsons sacks Dak Prescott, you will see that this is a game where the Cowboys are losing two of their top offensive linemen in Cooper Beebe and Tyler Booker. And oh, by the way, well, if you need time to throw because you don't have CeeDee Lamb and you expect George Pickens to get double coverage a bunch, that's going to be difficult to get given the offensive line. Micah actually told the AP's Rob Motti that it would be, quote, painful to sack Dak after the friendship they'd share. But that obviously that's what he'll do should the moment present itself. So this is a game between two teams where I think the Green Bay Packers are the better team. You never know what happens on Sunday Night Football, but I just think that the Cowboys are a little bit short-staffed, in part because of injuries and in part because, oh yeah, they traded away one of their players to the team that's coming to visit them.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a painful game for the Cowboys and Cowboys fans. And as Joy pointed out, part of it is just the Packers. There's no other way to put it. They blew that game against the Browns. They were in control. They weren't impressive, but basically, if they don't turn the ball over, they're going to win the game, whether it's 10-3, 13-10, some low scoring game, and get out of Dodge and be 3-0. And then maybe you can make the argument that it's a letdown game against the Packers. They overlook them, et cetera. But one, they lost that game. So like Jory said, they're going to be upset. And two, CeeDee Lamb is hurt. We just saw what that offense looked like against the Chicago Bears defense in the second half without CeeDee Lamb. Now they're going against the Packers defense, the number one defense in the league by DVOA. We've seen this line open back. I keep referencing these lines, right, at different times. This opened in May, obviously before the Micah Parsons trade. Packers -1.5 at the Cowboys. This reopened -4.5. It got quickly pushed up to about -6. Some more sharp money came in. We're now at Packers -7. So again, in May, Packers -1.5. Now Packers -7. Obviously, a combination of both teams, how they've looked, and then obviously the injuries as well. The Cowboys can run the ball. I was surprised. They're actually fourth in rushing DVOA. I think that's their only path to victory here is long, sustained drives, score touchdowns, couple of turnovers maybe, and they stay in the game and late enough that Brandon Aubrey, one of their best offensive players now, the kicker, kicks a long field goal and they win the game. But otherwise, the Packers have the advantage in just about every other category. This is going to be a money line parlay and teaser for everyone and their brother on Sunday. This will be a big game for the sports books. The public's going to be all over the Packers here.
Well, Andrew, did you tell Ben that we had to make sure that we had a Brandon Aubrey mention every single day of the week on the show? Because I think that Thursday's show might have been the only one that we did not oversell Brandon Aubrey. So I'm just so glad we corrected that.
You can't oversell Brandon Aubrey. You cannot.
Guy's amazing.
The weapon that is.
Absolutely. You're right. I can only imagine what the bettors think of him.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that in place of CeeDee Lamb in the backfield, and I know they're taking a lot of heat there for the way they used him, they should put Brandon Aubrey in the backfield. They put Kevontae Turpin in the backfield, for Pete's sake. Put anybody in the backfield. Brandon Aubrey is your best weapon. The Packers should have won the game, yes. And I think Matt LaFleur, matter of fact, he has said it, if he had to do it all over, he wouldn't throw on third down. He would have just run, but the Browns had shut down Josh Jacobs, for the most part, save for a couple of screens, and he had a couple of nice runs, but nothing amazing here. He should have run the ball on third down, and if he doesn't get it, punt it away and make the Browns go 80 yards. Go ahead, make them. They had just marched down the field behind two runs from Quinshon Judkins on consecutive plays. They picked up 52 yards total, but then they got down into the red zone and a couple of penalties, and they had to settle for a field goal. Make the Browns drive the length of the field. Matt LaFleur chose to throw it, and because the Browns were getting so much pressure on Jordan Love, he threw a pick. He was shaken, and he threw a pick, and Grant Delpit jumped it, and that changed the game. They should have won it, and I think you're right. The Packers, the last thing the Cowboys needed was the Packers losing that game the way they lost that game. And I think it would not surprise me if this is a replay of the playoff game from a couple of years ago where the Packers went in there and just demolished the Cowboys by 40 points. For recreational purposes only.
I agree.
Just my opinion here. It would not surprise me if this team plays with its hair on fire. Now, they have offensive line issues. Zach Tom was out after only one snap. Left guard, Banks, an issue. They have legit issues, but the Cowboys can't rush the passer. So, you know, it's a wash, at least in my eyes right now, with the Packers' offensive line struggles. I think they win this, and I think they win it going away. All right, looking down here at my clock, we have about 4.5 minutes remaining here for the final fun segment. And we're not dwelling in negativity here, and we're not saying anything is a must win, because there's no such thing as a must win unless you're in the postseason. But we're going to phrase it this way. Which 0-3 team, Jory, you go first. Which 0-3 team in week 4 needs a win the most? And those teams are the Dolphins, the Jets, the Texans, and the Titans, who play each other, or the Giants. What do you say?
Yeah, I go with the New York Jets, and I say that because Aaron Glenn is a first-year head coach. He and Kellen Moore are both on that list as a first-year head coach, but I think that when Kellen Moore took over the Saints job, there was this idea, this team's not quite ready. This roster's not quite ready. We don't have a quarterback. We don't have several key pieces. It's going to take time. And on top of that, he is being player-friendly, not in the sense of going soft on them, but he's not going around screaming at them. I think that Aaron Glenn's tough love, tough discipline approach that he is taking with the Jets can still work in 2025, but it's more difficult. And I think in order for it to work, you need to be able to get the buy-in from the players in the form of wins on the scoreboard. Now, the Jets are not as bad as their 0-3 record looks. They've lost two of those games by literally 2 points each, not even a field goal. But I do think that when you look at this, if you say, hey, we're going to cut the guy who fumbles and we're going to make you practice again on this day and we're going to do this and that, I think it's hard to keep sustaining that approach with today's generation of players if you don't have a win to show for it. And so I think the New York Jets need to win this game.
And I looked at the question. Hopefully I didn't misunderstand the assignment. Of all the teams, I think the only team that has a chance to do anything this season is the Texans, right? And so that's kind of where I went in terms of them playing. They're a touchdown favorite against the Titans. The Titans are just the Texans, I should say, one of the only teams, as well as the Saints, 0-3 against the spread. So they've been disappointing to bettors, been disappointing, obviously, 0-3 to start the season. And they're facing the Titans. It's hard to put in perspective how bad the Titans have been against the spread, but I'll try. In their last 20 games, they are 3-17 against the number, which is really difficult when they keep getting a ton of points. They're also 0-10 as a home underdog since last season. And so, in their last 10 games as a home underdog, and they will be a home underdog again in this game. So the Texans should have a great defense. They've blown at least one game, if not two. And if they want to get their season back on track, this is where they need to start.
And I'm going to take the team that's playing the Jets. I'm going to take the Dolphins. It maybe isn't Tennessee level tension on the podium with the head coach or the players and the media with the pitchforks yet there, but it isn't comfortable. We all know that last Thursday, the Dolphins, the Bills, like, is this a must win or is Mike McDaniel going to get fired? They didn't win and they're still all there. But can we play this? This is Tua today. When asked about Cam Newton and his ridiculous hat, I don't know which hat he was wearing, but they're all ridiculous.
He said he threw an interception and he makes $53 million. You know what I mean? Because they do. They always say that. I heard Cam Newton say it the other
night. Well, anybody can play quarterback in this league then. I mean, I want to see anybody on the streets come and play quarterback. I mean, Cam's doing his thing for sure, but you know, I think it's easier to be able to hold a clicker and talk about it that way, or talk about what someone else is doing wrong when you're not going out and having to do the same as them, right? So I think it's easy to do that. I think anybody can do that. I don't think anybody can play quarterback. So.
Okay, so there's that. Was that like a vitriolic back and forth? No, but it's one thing to lose to the Bills on a short week. Bills are, whatever, the best offense in football. No one wins in Buffalo the last couple of years with Josh Allen, a quarterback. It's another thing to lose to the Jets and realize we're not even the second team in the Buffalo Bills AFC East Invitational. We're now losing to the Jets. And then next week they go to Carolina. I mean, whatever that game is. And then you get the Chargers. My point is, you need to win one at some point to prove that this season is there for any reason other than looking forward to 2026. And the questions are only going to get more difficult. The criticism is only going to get louder. Mike McDaniel's rambling on the podium, I love the guy, is only going to be more and more overanalyzed and scrutinized if they don't get a win. And I do think it looks worse when you lose to the winless Jets. I really do think that matters, regardless of who their quarterback is. So I'm going to go the Dolphins need it most. And part of the reason I'm taking the Dolphins over the Texans is because, Ben, you in the chat grabbed the Texans first. And Jory pointed out, we've talked a lot about the Texans this week, and both of you are true, or right, rather, and all of that is true. And I might have taken the Texans, so I'm sticking with the Dolphins.
Andrew, can I just say, when Tua was making this comment about it's easier to have the clicker and talk about playing quarterback than playing quarterback, is that not a little bit ironic when he's talking about Cam Newton, who, yes, is no longer playing pro football, but the man was an MVP. The man did go to a Super Bowl. He
pretty
was
good.
A three-time
played
pro
pretty well.
Cam Newton did play quarterback. So I don't know. I don't think Tua's ever played at the level that Cam has played at. I don't know.
Yeah. There are some quarterbacks on TV that did not have Cam Newton's success. By the way, most of them do really good jobs on television, not taking shots. But yeah, this guy actually won an MVP. He single-handedly kind of took the Panthers to the postseason and then took them to the Super Bowl. And he still wears ridiculous hats. But either way, he said what he said and Tua said what he said. And I think the Dolphins need this one and they need it badly. Friends, this has been fun. We'll make it a tradition truly unlike any other if Jory and Ben will have it. And we'll be back for another show on Monday. Jory, Ben, have a fantastic weekend. Thank you both. Everyone listening and watching, we thank you as well. Enjoy your football both Thursday night, Sunday night, and we'll be back before the Monday night game. For Jory and Ben, my name is Andrew Siciliano. This is Inside Coverage. So long, everybody.